यमुना तीरा बनाचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपद परमहंस परिव्रजाचार्य अष्टोत्तर सत श्री श्रीमद ऐसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय नामाचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकुर की जय प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्त वृंद की जय श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरि गोवर्धन की जय श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय श्री मथुर धाम की जय श्री जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की जय श्री मायापुर धाम की जय श्रीमती तुलसी देवी की जय भक्ति देवी की जय सामवेद भक्त वृंद की जय All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya, Vidlesha, Antibhakti, Vinanta, Swami, Nityananda. Namaste, Sarasati Devi, Gauravani, Pracharini, Nirvise, Sasanivari, Paschati, Deshtari. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantyakam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Juta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavanscha, Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Visakhan Vitangscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Let's see. Today we're reading from chapter 18 verse 36 through 39. We can just chant through the Sanskrit together because it's four verses, and then we'll read the translations.
Sukam tvidanim trividham. Shinu me Bharatar Sabha Abhyasa Ramate Yatra Dukhantam Cha Nigachati Yathad Agre Visham Iva Pariname Mritopamam Tatsukam Satvikam Proktam Atmabuddhi prasadajam. Vishayendriya sangyogad. Yathad agre mritpamam. Yathad agre mritopamam. Pariname visham eva. Tatsukam rajasam smritam. Yad agre chanu bande cha. Sukam mohanam atmana. Nidralasya pramadotam. Tattamasam udahritam.
Okay, so now we'll read the translations. O best of the Bharatas, now please hear from me about the three kinds of happiness by which the conditioned soul enjoys and by which he sometimes comes to the end of all distress. We can repeat. O best of the Bharatas, now please hear from me about the three kinds of happiness by which the conditioned soul enjoys and by which he sometimes comes to the end of all distress. Text 37. That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. Text 38. That happiness which is derived from constant contact of the senses with their objects, and which appears like nectar at first, but poison at the end, is said to be of the nature of passion. That happiness which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects, and which appears like nectar at first, but poison at the end, is said to be of the nature of passion. Text 39. And that happiness which is blind to self-realization, which is delusion from beginning to end, and which arises from sleep, laziness, and illusion, is said to be of the nature of ignorance. And that happiness, which is blind to self-realization, which is delusion from beginning to end, and which arises from sleep, laziness and illusion, is said to be of the nature of ignorance. Okay, now we can go back to the purport of 36. A conditioned soul tries to enjoy material happiness again and again. Thus he chews the chewed. But sometimes, in the course of such enjoyment, he becomes relieved from material entanglement by association with the great soul. In other words, a conditioned soul is always engaged in some type of sense gratification. But when he understands by good association that it is only a repetition of the same thing, and he is awakened to his real Krishna consciousness, he is sometimes relieved from such repetitive so-called happiness. Text 37 purport. In the pursuit of self-realization, One has to follow many rules and regulations to control the mind and the senses, and to concentrate the mind on the self. All these procedures are very difficult, bitter like poison. But if one is successful in following the regulations and comes to the transcendental position, he begins to drink real nectar and he enjoys life. Purport to 38. A young man and a young woman meet, and the senses drive the young man to see her, to touch her, and to have sexual intercourse. In the beginning, this may be very pleasing to the senses, but at the end, or after some time, it becomes just like poison. They are separated, or there is divorce, there is lamentation, there is sorrow, etc. Such happiness is always in the mode of passion. Happiness derived from a combination of the senses and the sense objects is always a cause of distress and should be avoided by all means. Text 39, purport. One who takes pleasure in laziness and in sleep is certainly in the mode of darkness, ignorance, and one who has no idea how to act and how not to act is also in the mode of ignorance. For the person in the mode of ignorance, everything is illusion. There is no happiness either in the beginning or at the end. For the person in the mode of passion, there might be some kind of ephemeral happiness in the beginning and at the end distress. But for the person in the mode of ignorance, there is only distress both in the beginning and at the end. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachayani Nirvisesa Sunyavari Paschati Desakarni. While trying to find out a proper subject matter to cover four verses at one class, there were many examples that could have been chosen. First, I was trying to include the Satgarbhas, that's the six sons that were killed by Kamsa, and trying to figure out how to incorporate all of the three different types of happiness in that example. Finally, after much studying, I found a continuation of what we were describing last week. We were discussing the 50 daughters of Mandata Maharaj who married Sobari Muni. And it so happened that Mandata Maharaj, he had three sons. One of them was Ambarish, who we've all heard of. And another one was Muchukunda, who we've also heard of. So while studying the history of Muchukunda, I found that all three of these types of happiness could easily be discussed, because it's a very important story that's described by all the Mahabhagwats, especially by Srila Prabhupada, and the importance of Muchukunda's prayers after his darshan of Lord Krishna describe the top, the bottom, and in between of all the different types of happiness in this material world, and ultimately the highest pleasure, which is devotional service to Krishna. So we have to go back to Satya Yuga. There was Svayambhuva Manu. No, at this time, there was Vivisvan, the sun god, and Satyavrata. He, after being saved by Lord Matsya, he became Vaivasvata Manu, the son of Vivisvan. And we know from the beginning of Bhagavad Gita how Vaivasvata Manu, he instructed Svayambhuva Manu, who instructed his son Ikshvaku. So we have a few more generations coming down from the line of Ikshvaku, and we have the Yuvanashva, who we described last week. He accidentally drank the water meant for his wife, so he gave birth to Mandata from the right side of his stomach. And Mandata became the king of Mathura in Satya Yuga. He was a very pious and powerful king. In one day, he was able to conquer the entire world. He was so powerful. And Mandata, he married a very qualified queen. He gave birth to these three sons and the 50 daughters. 50 daughters married Sobari Rishi. And Muchukunda, he became a great powerful king. He was so powerful that even the demigods, when they had to fight with the demons, they would call upon him to come to heaven and fight with them. So at one time during Satya Yuga, he was fighting for thousands of years, and he defeated the demons. Now, why are the demons and the demigods fighting? The demigods, they're always taking shelter of the Supreme Lord in order to get sense gratification in this material world. And the demons, on the strength of their own so-called power, they're also seeking sense gratification. At this time, they lived on different planets, and they would fight in order to get the highest types of pleasure that were available in the heavenly planets. So after the demons had been defeated in this particular battle, Indra, he asked, and Kartikeya, who was the general of the demigods, they asked Muchukunda for some boon. He was so tired that he couldn't think of anything else but sleeping. Now, if Lord Indra and Kartikeya came before us and said, "We offer you any boon you want except liberation, because only Vishnu can give liberation," what would each one of us ask for? What would you ask for? Peace? Mental peace. What would you ask for? You would ask for pure devotional service. How about if you hadn't slept for 1,000 years? What would you ask for then? So poor Muchukunda Maharaj, he was so tired from fighting. He wasn't even thinking of devotional service or Krishna's lotus feet. Nothing. He just said, "Please let me sleep without disturbance so that I can regain my strength." Because he had his kingdom to go back to. Actually, Kartikeya explained to him that you've been fighting for so long that your wife, your children, your kingdom, all of your subjects died long ago. You have nothing to go back to now. So Muchukunda decided he would sleep. And Indra, he added on that you will be allowed to sleep as long as you want, and if anyone tries to disturb you, just by your glance, you can burn them to ashes. So these are all within the material realm, all these things, the material world. Like a Ferris wheel, some people get to go up to the heavenly planets and enjoy by their severe sacrifices and performance of charity. They go up, they become demigods or residents in the heavenly planets. And then when their sacrifices and penances results are used up, they come down again. So this is one type of enjoyment, but all within this dark sphere of the universe. So Muchukunda, to regain his strength, to enjoy himself, he went to a cave. Now, one time we were traveling, we couldn't get the usual trains that come from Bombay to Mathura, and those trains are very fast. You can get the August Krunti, whatever. But that time, the only thing available was a Central Railways train that took us through Madhya Pradesh, and we had to get to Vrindavan, so we took a ticket. And when we got into the deepest part of the jungle in Madhya Pradesh, some people who were sitting next to us pointed out there and said, over in this area is Muchukunda's cave. And there's a little town there. Dolpur. All right. So, thank you. But it was a very ferocious and scary part of the jungle. Mountains and no people and jungles. You could just feel the wild animals were going to come out at any time. So Muchukunda chose that area to sleep because no people inhabited that area. He slept for such a long time that the end of Dwarpa Yuga had come. Krishna had just left beautiful Vrindavan. He had come to Mathura and he had killed Kamsa. Because he killed Kamsa, Kamsa's father-in-law kept trying to kill Krishna. He came 17 times, each time Krishna defeated him, and he had to go back unsuccessful to Magad. So he was preparing the 18th time to come. At the same time, Garga Muni, who was the Acharya of the Yadus, he had once had a dispute with his relative, brother-in-law, something like that. You know how family members can fight and insult each other. And the Yadus, they were laughing at this argument. And Garga Muni became insulted. So he decided that he was going to create someone to cause trouble to the Yadus. And in the womb of the wife of a Yavana king, he produced this demoniac person, Kalyavana. Kalyavana, he was born then simply for the purpose of disturbing the Yadus. And that was his only aim in life. Now, there are two different types of lower class people below the Sudras. That's the Yavanas and the Mlechas. The Yavanas, they still follow some type of sacrifices in order for enjoyment. But below them are the Mlechas who follow no rules and regulations whatsoever. So Kalyavana, by his sacrifices, he worshipped Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, and they gave him a benediction that no resident of Mathura could kill him. And Krishna knew about this benediction. So all of these fightings between kings, between empires, it's only for one reason: to get happiness so that the people can enjoy. If they see something that they want that someone else has, they'll attack. So Mathura was a beautiful kingdom at that time, and Krishna was overseeing, Ugrasen was the king, and Kalyavana decided he was going to attack Mathura, overcome and get all the riches of this opulent area. Now Krishna understood, he was discussing with Balaram, that Jarasandha, he's on his way over here. He's coming from the north. Kalyavana is coming from the south to attack us. If we fight with Jarasandha, then Kalyavana will come. If we fight with Kalyavana, then Jarasandha will come and he'll try to take all of our family members away. So then Krishna decided to build this fort in Dwarka, which at that time was a part of Mathura. The kingdom was so large. He built this magnificent fort with the help of Vishvakarma and transferred all of his family members there. Then Kalyavana came. At that time, Mathura was empty. Only Krishna was there. He sent Balaram to be the father of Dwarka. So when Kalyavana came, because he was demoniac by nature, he couldn't recognize Krishna. He only saw him as a dazzling, beautiful young boy. He saw all of his ornaments, his lotus eyes. But demons can't recognize the Supreme Lord. just as we see here, one who is in the mode of ignorance, they're simply interested, we'll read the verse, that happiness which is blind to self-realization, which is delusion from beginning to end, and which arises from sleep, laziness, and illusion, is said to be of the nature of ignorance. So although the Supreme Lord was standing directly in front of Kalyavana, because he had no interest in self-realization, and he was deluded by the material energy, specifically this mode of ignorance, he couldn't recognize the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord, with his lotus feet, just walked right past him. No weapons in his hands, nothing. And Kalyavana, being a Yavan, he was still following the principles. He decided, if my enemy doesn't have weapons, then I'll also give up my weapons and fight hand to hand with him. So he started chasing Krishna. But because he was in the mode of ignorance, even the great yogis can't capture Krishna. Only Mother Yasoda is able to capture Krishna. So as far as he ran, he couldn't catch up with Krishna. But by Krishna's deluding potency, he kept thinking, I'm getting closer, I just have to run a little faster. So Krishna took him out of the whole area of Mathura into this deep jungle in Madhya Pradesh and took him to Muchakunda's cave, because Krishna knew he wasn't going to be able to kill Kalyavana. He took him and he ran into the cave, and Muchakunda, he was blaspheming him in different ways that only demons can do, calling Krishna so many names and insulting him, calling him a coward. And he ran in after Krishna. The cave was dark, and he only saw one man lying on the ground there. He thought that was Krishna. So he violently kicked who he believed to be Krishna. It wasn't Krishna, it was Muchakunda. Muchakunda woke up before he wanted to, looked at Kalyavana, and burnt him to ashes. At this point, Muchakunda saw in his cave a beautiful divine light. And then he saw Krishna. The light was emanating from Krishna. And because he was a devotee of the Lord, he recognized Krishna as a Supreme Lord. But out of humility, before asking who the Lord was, he introduced himself, the son of Mandata, a king, a kshatriya, and how he came there. And then he asked the Lord to introduce himself. And when Krishna told him who he was, Muchakunda then began to offer very famous prayers. And these prayers describe all these types of happiness. He described that one who is in this material ocean, he's just drowning, this Bhava Sagar, until he takes to the path of Upavarg. Now, does everybody here know about the Upavarg? Does anyone know the meaning of the word Upavarg? One person. Okay, since most of you don't know, it's a very important word that Prabhupada describes again and again, and you'll find all over Srimad Bhagavatam. Upa, just like we have in Hindi the word apas, it means opposite. So apa means the opposite. And in Sanskrit, Sanskrit is very rational and mathematical, very logical. And there are different vargs or lines, depending upon which part of the mouth you use to make sounds. There's the guttural in your throat. There's the top of the mouth. There's the tip of the tongue. There's the teeth, when your tongue touches the teeth. And there's when you say words with your lips, like ma, ba, pa, like that. So one of these vargs is the pavarg. And that's the one that you say with your lips. Pa, pa, ba, ba, ma. Five sounds that you pronounce with your lips. And that is called the pavarg. So in Sanskrit, every single syllable has a meaning. And that's how the Sanskrit words are created. And that's why one word can be interpreted in many different ways, and that's why we need Prabhupada and the Acharyas to understand each word. So this pavarg with five sound vibrations is described by the Acharyas to have each syllable five meanings. Pa is for parishram. That means in this material world, parishram means to endeavor very hard, to work hard. Like we have the word ashram. That means according to our work, we're in a particular part of society. So parishram means when we have to work very hard. That's pa. And then pa, that is for fena. Fena means after you work very hard, foam comes to our mouth. Just like we're working hard in the sun, suddenly our mouth becomes so dry, all the saliva turns to foam. Or the horses and the bulls, the cow, the oxen, you'll see foam coming from their mouth. So that's the result of parishram, fena. Then, ba. Well, that is, even after working hard, so hard that foam comes to your mouth, everything is byart. All that hard work is useless. Byart means there's no arth. There's no gain to it. There's art, there's anart, and there's vyart. So arth means gain, like artha, kama, artha, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So by performing religious activities, dharma, we get kama, which is sense gratification, and then there's art, which is dharma. No, there's performance of religious activities, then we get a nice result, a gain, and from that gain we get sense gratification, and ultimately when we become frustrated, we seek dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Then we seek liberation. It's all within the material plane, even liberation. So artha means gain. Anartha, which we know what the word anartha means. It's the things we're trying to get out of our heart. And then there's vyartha, means absolutely useless when you add V to something. So that's the ba. Ba and va, it's the same. Then, after we realize that all of our hard work is useless, next comes bha, bhai, fear. Because we've worked hard our whole life, there's been no gain whatsoever, we're old now, our senses are becoming weak, and there's nothing to look forward to in life anymore, and we become fearful. So that's bhai. And the last is ma, mritu. Our life has been wasted in sense gratification uselessly. We're fearful what will happen to us. And finally, the last insult, death. So this is the pavarg. And one who seeks liberation, that path is called apavarg. So this is very important, this whole principle. And this is what the devotees are seeking, this path of apavarg, so they can come to the region beyond liberation, which is devotion to Krishna. So Muchukunda, he was lamenting to Krishna that I was a great king, I was so powerful that I would sit on my throne, and even my peers, they would offer respects to me because I was superior to everyone. But even in my superiority riding on elephants and horses, when I would enter the inner chambers of my wife, I would become the slave to my wife just to enjoy sense gratification. So Muchukunda understood all of the intricacies of futility in trying to enjoy in this material world. He said, even the greatest, most powerful king gets only three results. Either he becomes stool, or he becomes ashes, or he becomes worms. Why is that? Because at the time of death, three things can happen to the body. You can be burnt, and your body can be turned to ashes. Or you can be neglected and die alone in the forest. In some cultures, they just take the old people out into the jungle and let them die. And the animals eat them, sometimes alive. So then they become the stool of animals. Or in some cultures, they bury their dead. They put them in a coffin. And in our body is a microcosm of this universe. We are one Atma in the body, but in our body are millions of other Atmas, and some of them are worms. So when we, the Atma, leave this particular body, the worms continue to live in our body, and ultimately they start eating our whole body up. So our whole body just gets turned into worms. So that is the result of any type of happiness, whether it's in the mode of goodness, performing sacrifices and charity, whether it's in the mode of passion, trying to enjoy with the sensual pleasures, or the demoniac enjoyment of laziness, illusion, and sleep, or just total forgetfulness of the Supreme Lord. So as Muchukunda was lamenting to the Supreme Lord that I've wasted my life simply fighting to attain some ephemeral happiness, now I've slept all these thousands of years, there's no one even to enjoy with anymore, my family is dead. So when Krishna asked him, what boon would you like? Muchukunda had come to the final stage of realization. He says, I don't want anything. Please allow me to only remember you at every moment of my life. So Krishna blessed him that, yes, you are my pure devotee. You will always remember me. But because in your lifetime as a kshatriya, you perform sinful activities, you hunted, and you also sacrificed animals to perform elevation yagyas to get to heaven. You have sinful reactions that you have to atone for. So before you can go back to my supreme abode, you have to perform austerities. So he directed Muchukunda to go to Badrik Ashram. He performed austerities and perfected his love for Krishna there. And from there, he was elevated to the supreme abode. So this is the process of realization. Last week, he's not here, but one devotee asked about Pitriloka. Now, this is the time. You'll notice that the last week or so, it's been very quiet in the temple. Very few pilgrims have come at this time. That's because this is the time of what's called Pitripaksh, right? Now, there are 2 weeks out of the year when it's recommended for those who want elevation to the heavenly planets, actually to Pitriloka, that they perform sacrifices in honor of their ancestors. So what happens is there are two types of heavenly planets. There's the heavenly planets in the northern part of the universe, and they're the subterranean or southern heavenly planets. And one of those heavenly planets, and heavenly means a lot of enjoyment. It just means material enjoyment. It means more sense gratification, better eating, better sleeping, better mating, and what's the last one? Oh, defense. Your enemies can't attack you, although they try to. So the Earth planet is in the center, we know. And from here, we get to choose whether we want to be elevated or whether we get degraded or whether we want to leave this universe entirely by engaging in devotional service. Now, for people who are attached to enjoyment in this material world, particularly for people who have taken birth in aristocratic families and are very attached to their family members, at the time of death, they're not interested in going back to Godhead. They want to take birth in their families again. So what happens to them is they go to a place called Pitriloka. And that is the planet where Yamaraj lives. Yamaraj does not live on the hellish planets. He lives in Pitriloka in the southern portion. It's we have the seven lower planets like Sutala, Atala. Anybody know the names? Say them loud. Patal. Right? Atala, Rasatala. The lowest one is Patala. Now, between Patala Lok and the Garbhodak Ocean is an empty area, and that's where the hellish planets are, and that's where Pitriloka is, where Yamaraj lives. So for people who are attached to their families, they go to live with Yamaraj in a very opulent setting. For instance, this is why I wanted to discuss the Sadgarbhas. When the six older brothers of Krishna were killed, they all went to Pitriloka. That's a different history. If we have time, we'll describe it. But a lot of people remain there, and they remain there for three generations. And they eat the offerings that are given at this time, Pitripaksha, each year. It's called pinda, right? It's ground up rice and barley flour with sesame in it. So all of this is karmakanda activities. The devotees don't know about these things because for a devotee, they offer everything to Vishnu and they're not interested in taking birth again in their families. They're interested in breaking through the coverings of this universe and going back to the spiritual world where there's no birth and death and mothers and fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers. None of those things exist in the spiritual world. So we as devotees don't know these things. But for the materialists, these 2 weeks are very important because their ancestors are depending on this pinda to eat. So they offer... They have what's called Shraddh at this time. And they offer pinda at Gaya, at Mathura, at all these holy places, so that their ancestors will be fed. And then after three generations in Pitriloka, the ancestors take birth again in their family that was feeding them the pinda and observing Shraddh. So it's just like you see at the... You know, we have the big carnivals and festivals here. They have and we even have one here in Vrindavan at the Rath Mela. Big Ferris wheel. You've seen the Ferris wheels? You get in the bottom, takes you up to the top, and you can see everything from the top, and then you have to go down in the bottom again. And then you come out. Few times like this, you get sick in your stomach, and that's enough. So... That's what this whole material world is. Just like a big Ferris wheel going round and round. And even if you go to Pitriloka, you have to take birth again on earth in your family, and you have to perform the Shraddh for your ancestors, And you're so afraid that if you don't, then they'll remain as ghosts and they won't be able to take birth again in your family. It's complete karma kandiya. And that's why the devotees do not observe this. We every day, 6 times a day, minimum 56 offerings we're giving to Krishna and Balaram here. If you count, we have more than six offerings, because even before Mangalartik, a beautiful sweet is offered, special sweet is offered, and at night when nobody knows, before Krishna goes to sleep, there's a wonderful sweet put by his bed. So we have at least 8 offerings, and each of those offerings, when Prabhupada gave us the list of what we're supposed to offer here to the deities, it was just phenomenal. It was at least 100 different things that we had to offer. 4 different kinds of sabjis, 4 different kinds of dal, chapatis and puris and chutneys, and it just went on forever. Because Krishna is always enjoying, and we as his devotees, we're always working very hard for Krishna's sense gratification. We don't even care that we're going to get the prasadam afterwards. It comes automatically. When we're cooking for Krishna, we're not thinking, oh, I'm going to get this afterwards. We're just thinking, oh, I hope Krishna enjoys this. I have to make this nice. I have to read the recipes. How did Radharani cook? How is it that the rice could talk to Radharani and tell her when it was finished? All of these meditations are there when we're cooking for Krishna. We have no interest in what the prasadam is going to taste like on our tongue. We are interested in how Krishna is going to enjoy. So the devotee is in a completely different realm, even while supposedly in this world. He's already in the spiritual world. Because what is the spiritual world composed of? It's consciousness. We don't take these bodies with us. These bodies, worm, ash, stool. It's our consciousness that brings us back to the spiritual world. So when we're fully engaged in Krishna's happiness, in Krishna's sense gratification, then we have broken out of the shackles of happiness in the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. We are then in the modes of sudasattva, pure goodness, because we're thinking of Krishna's happiness. Now, when Krishna appeared, before he appeared, Devaki, who was already a great devotee, a pure devotee of the Lord, this was the third time Krishna was appearing to her as her son, but first her womb had to be purified. So, at the beginning of the creation, while Brahma was still creating, from his mind came one son called Marichi. And Marichi had 6 sons. And Lord Brahma, in the process of creation, he created one of his daughters was Saraswati. And he became very attracted to Saraswati in the mode of passion. He started chasing his own daughter. And sages who had come out of Lord Brahma's mind, they didn't want to insult their own father. But you'll find a very polite way of correcting someone is not to speak to them directly, but to hold a conversation in such a way that they can hear it, but you're not directly speaking to them. So the sages began to speak amongst themselves in such a way that their father Brahma could hear, that we're so surprised to see our father acting in this way. And when Brahma heard that, he became ashamed of his actions, and he gave up his body. And that body, you'll find, those of you who stay here in the winter time, there's a very dense fog that occurs here in winter time. And it's so dense that if you put your hand like this, you can't even see it. And if you're driving in a car, you can't see anything in front of you. Anyone has seen that dense fog coming from Delhi or trying to get home from Govardhan? Impossible to get through. You just have to stop the car sometimes. So that was the body that the body that was given up by Brahma. It was that dense fog that took the form from that body. And then Brahma began his creation again. But the sons of Marici, they ridiculed their grandfather. And Brahma cursed them that because you didn't act properly, although I was acting improperly, because you're my juniors, you shouldn't have ridiculed me. So you're going to have to take some births for purification. So first they had to take birth as the sons of Kalanimi, who they were the grandsons of Hiranyakashipu. And as asuras, they were only interested in long life and a lot of pleasure. So they followed in the footsteps of their grandfather at that time, Hiranyakashipu, and they performed austerities to Lord Brahma, and they asked for the same type of boons that Hiranyakashipu asked for, that they wouldn't be killed by demons, by demigods, by two-legged, by creatures, by anything. And when Hiranyakashipu heard that, they had done this without his sanction, he doubly cursed them. That you foolish demons, you're trying to become more powerful than me, your own grandfather, so you're going to be killed in your next lifetime by your own father. So Kalanimi took birth as Kamsa, and these six boys who had now been doubly cursed, they one by one took birth from Devaki's womb. And they were the six unwanted qualities that all the devotees try to avoid. That is, kam, krodh, lobh, moha, madha, matsarya. Now, who, for those that don't know Sanskrit, can tell us what they mean? Kam? Yes. Krodh? Yes. We all know that anger is the younger brother of lust. So they're actually taking birth as brothers now. Kam, krodh, lobh? Yes. Because kam, krodh, lobh. First there's desire. Then kam, krodh. Then when we can't satisfy our desire, we become angry. And then we become greedy for more and more. Kam, krodh, lobh. It goes right in a line. Then, this is explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Kam, krodh, lobh. And then we become so greedy and we still haven't been able to attain our desires. We become illusioned and we fall down into the material sphere. Moha. Then madha. We become mad. And then matsarya. Well, everything starts from matsarya, which is envy of the Supreme Lord. Because we didn't want to feed Krishna all that wonderful prasadam. We wanted to enjoy it ourselves. Therefore, we have come here to this material world. And because we wanted to forget Krishna, we are now trying to enjoy without Krishna's presence. He's let us do what we want to do. And we've become shackled by these six qualities: kam, krodh, lobh, moha, madha, matsarya. So each one of these six brothers first took birth from Devaki's womb. They were killed by Kamsa, who was death personified and fear personified, and they went down to Pitriloka. Now, when Krishna, after he established Dwarka, and he brought all of his family members there, all of the demigods, 33 million demigods, when they saw that Krishna was making his fort, each one of them gave gifts to Krishna. So you can imagine how opulent Dwarka must have been. So Indra, he gave the assembly hall, Sudharma, and he gave the Parijata tree. So each day in the assembly hall, Ugrasen would, Vasudev, he would sit there. Krishna Balaram would come and take blessings every morning. And Vasudev could understand, he had heard from the sages of Kurukshetra that Krishna Balaram are the Supreme Lord. So he was praising his sons as the original Vishnus, and Devaki was sitting next to him. So Devaki was listening to all this praise, understanding that her two sons were the Supreme Lord, and she realized that my two sons are here, but my six sons previous, I never even got to hold them. I hardly got to see them before they were killed. So she asked Krishna to bring them back. So Krishna Balaram, they instantly went to Pitriloka, the place of the ancestors, where they were happily enjoying with Yamaraj, and brought them back to Mother Devaki. Now, these boys had already been purified because they were in touch with the mother of Krishna. But then Mother Devaki, she fed them the same milk that Krishna had drunk. So then they became completely pure. At that time, they were allowed to go back to their original position. So when we take the prasadam of Krishna, although we have demoniac qualities, we can't see Krishna, we can't recognize him, we can't appreciate him, by taking this prasadam, we will become purified, develop our spiritual bodies, and eventually we will be allowed to taste the highest happiness, which is that happiness of pleasing Krishna's senses. All right, are there any questions? Mike? Bhakta Mike?
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Yes, Madhavi. Thank you for a wonderful class. In this one instance, in Chaitanya Bhagavat, where one Brahmana is, he is not equally devoted to Nityananda Prabhu as he is to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he questions that why is Nityananda Prabhu, even though being a sannyasi, behaving like that. So then Mahaprabhu starts glorifying Nityananda Prabhu, and he speaks about this Satgarbha, this, that what is the... what is the consequence of just making fun of great personalities?
Yeah.
In that instance, Mahaprabhu says that Krishna and Balaram went to Bali Maharaj to bring the six...
Oh, yeah. They were at Sutala. You're right. Because yes. They were the... When Vamanadev told Bali Maharaj to go to Sutala, he told him to take all of his family members with him. And because those six were the sons of the grandsons of Hiranyakashipu, they went there. Yes, you're right. Forgive me. So many details.
I wanted to ask about... if I offer my boga to a spiritual master to whom that he belonged to the wrong parampara, which is not a bona fide one, or let's say that, you know, he's not properly situated within the parampara that I'm supposed to offer my boga, is it considered to be prasadam?
It's a line. So the line is the guru offers it to his guru, who offers it to his guru. It goes all the way up through the parampara till it gets to Krishna. Then it becomes prasadam, and then again it comes down through the parampara. Correct? So that's why there's maha prasadam, and there's maha prasadam. And that's when maha prasadam is eaten by a devotee, a pure devotee, or your guru. It's then called maha prasadam. So if someone is not in the line of disciplic succession, it's not going through the procedure of offering to Krishna, and is not coming back down again either as prasadam. So that's why, even let's say there's a break, let's say a spiritual master or someone that we're following might fall down, so then you can offer that prasadam to Srila Prabhupada, but it's never recommended to offer to someone who's not in the disciplic succession, because the line isn't there reaching Krishna. So if you're having any difficulty, you can offer that prasadam to Srila Prabhupada. All right?
Thank you.
Jai. Yes.
Krishna says, Putrin Yanti Pritarvata. So if you worship the ancestors, you go to the ancestors. But you mentioned that after three generations, they come and
they
take
come
birth.
Back. That's right. They'll come back again in the same family.
So again. Even the one who's offering goes to them.
Huh?
Even the one who's offering pind goes to them.
They go to the Pitri Loka, they stay there for three generations, and they come back again
and
in
they
the
come
family.
Back again.
Yeah. That's what I found in my research while going through Prabhupada's books and other shastras.
So they stay three generations of earthly time?
Well, in Pitri Loka, I don't know how long that would be. But no, well, 6 months. It's because those are the... there's Uttarayan and there's Dakshin heavenly planets. So 6 months is 1 day, right? So it would be 6 months day, 6 months night, like that. But you see, we don't, these things are, they're not, we don't study these things because we're not interested in going to Pitri Loka. It was just because that one devotee had asked last week, and because, like even today, someone called me up on the phone, our carpenter called me, and he invited me to come to the shroud of his father. And I had to politely say that I'm sorry, we don't, we're offering Vishnu prasad every day, so that's enough for us, because when you satisfy Vishnu, then everyone is satisfied.
Yes.
So
yes.
I had to
Somehow it is a very common question asked, you know, with, you know, new people when you're preaching, they always
right.
want to know about Pitraloka,
yeah,
you know,
that's
for some
right.
reason.
That's right.
And in the normal purpose of Srila Prabhupada, you don't get to read so much
no.
about Pitraloka.
All I knew was that one sloka, and then after studying I realized why we don't do it.
Yes.
And why we don't want to go to Pitri Loka, because it's all within this material universe. All right, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Yeah, Venus is where Sukracharya is. It's Sukra. Oh, yeah? Well. Only if you're giving Bhagavad Gita class and you want to talk about it. Yeah, right. But we're not interested in either. That's what you're supposed to do, yeah. That's what we do. When someone dies, we offer the prasadam to Krishna, and then we give that plate to the...
Every year, every shot, you have to do that same thing for that person. You just do it for the first year. When Prabhupada's sister died, she died 1 year in, 1 year after Prabhupada. We asked Jayapataka Swami what to do. So he said, make the offering and then bring the Mahaprasadam plate and put it in front of a picture of her. So then what Pishima's sons did was every year they would come here, and because her guru was at Imlitala, they would have the offering there, and then they would call the Vaishnavas and have us all take Mahaprasadam. So they did that so long as they were alive. Now they're not alive anymore. And it was only out of devotion, it was out of devotion, it gave them an excuse to come to Vrindavan every year, you know. So
we don't have to keep doing what you recommend for devotees. Like you say, someone's husband dies, for how many years should the wife observe that, or the family observe, just do it for the first year, not for that month?
You can ask somebody who knows that stuff. I mean, the person's already gone back to Godhead, right? Hopefully. Yeah. There is a planet called Patiloka in the material world. You know, so if the woman wants to follow her husband to Patiloka, but you know, why not just understand that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and he's the original. Yeah, right.
I guess you do your ritual for the first year and then you've done your duty, and after that.
But we know that the soul has gone somewhere else.
I read the whole Krishna book to my mother.
Many devotees ask,
she was talking to someone in the corner and the chair said, who are you talking to? She
said, oh, wow. How wonderful.
Also.
Oh, yeah. What did you say? That's all just some concoctions that, you know, you did the right thing.